We're holding on Chavez on the bays. We're holding on Chavez on the bays, four lines on the bottom. So we were discussing the sugya of Ishay Mishum Chet, Mishum Chitav, or Ishay Mishum Mamon. Okay, what's the underlying logic of the chiyuv that the Torah is mechayev you when you light a fire and it ends up burning somebody's property? Is it that it's considered as if you shot an arrow, and therefore whatever the fire ends up doing is considered as though you're doing it right there on the spot? Or is it Mishum Mamona? It's just like any other thing. If you're Mamona that you're supposed to take care of, and here your Mamona got out of hand and destroyed somebody's property.
The same way as
your Shur or your Bur or what have you that causes damage. That would be Ishum Mishum Mamona. So yeah, I meant to mention yesterday, right, we talked about the Nimuka Yosef's question that if we say Ishum Mishum Chitav, that whatever the fire goes on and continues doing is considered as though you're doing it right there on the spot, then how are you allowed to light Shabbos candles? Because in that case, when the wick is burning on Shabbos, doesn't it amount to that you're causing it to happen right there? And he answers that no, actually, we look at it rather from the point of view, when you set the fire, all of the inevitable consequences of it are all considered to flow from that. It's not like that, and not like you're doing it every second, in other words, but like, everything that happens in all those seconds all flows from that original thing that you did.
So grumma, that's...
But it's not grumma, because it's direct, because it's a direct consequence. Grumma would be an indirect consequence.
Isn't that a theory to begin with? I mean, the question does not...
No,
because...
Because the point of the shlokish, if we say isha mishum mamonai... The question is a point of yefim. I'm explaining. If you go a point of the shlokish, for example, we discussed yesterday that yes, when you, for example, when you start a fire in one place and then it spreads, you may be potter. We talked about yesterday, for example, the camel with the flax, etc. That's where the Gemara had to shtel it in, according to the Shlokish. We discussed yesterday in the Gemara, I think you missed that part, but that according to the Shlokish, for example, when it came to the whole building burning down from the flax that was lit by the candle, it would have to actually be that the flax was actually in contact with every part of the building that got lit on fire, not just, in other words, it ignited one place and the rest of it burnt on its own. Whereas the point of Yechon and that distinction wouldn't matter, because regardless, you shot the arrow to begin with, and therefore you're responsible for everything that happens to it. That was the Nimuka Yosef's question, in other words, but his answer is it's still only one pa'ula at the beginning, which then has ongoing consequences. So therefore, fine, the pa'ula, when it comes to Shabbos candles, takes place at a Shabbos.
I think the answer contradicts the question, because to begin with, the theory of Rabbi Yehuda is...
Rabbi Yehuda.
Is the initiating act. Is what causes the initiating act?
But that's the thing. According to Rabbi Yechon, Mishum Chitzav, it's considered as though you're actually doing the action. Every part that gets burnt is considered, on the face of it, is considered as though you're actually standing there right now and igniting it. But on the other hand, the Nimuka Yosef is saying that's not what Rabbi Yechon means. He means that you did one action which now has ongoing consequences.
To put it in the concept, causality is not in time, but it's
if you want to put it that way. I mean, the Nimuka Yosef puts it this way. Imagine, for example, a person were to light a fire and then dies, and then the fire goes and consumes his neighbor's property. You're not going to say that he's potter because he's dead already. The chiyuv still exists on him. Well, now that he's dead, fine, it exists on his yorshim, whatever. But, yeah, because, in other words, he started the initial process which led to all of this. Yeah. So one thing is, I forgot to mention yesterday, is There's the Achronim of the last 150 years or so. The earliest thing I've seen on this is from Maharam Sheikh from a Shulchan from the early 1870s. Is as far as Shabbos clocks. When you set a Shabbos clock to turn on or off lights or various other appliances like that, what are the dinim of that? So the Maharam Sheikh and most other Achronim who deal with the issue say, based on this, it shouldn't be an issue. Based on what the Nimuka Yosef is saying, as far as lighting a Shabbos candle, the same logic should apply to a Shabbos clock. You set it before Shabbos. The actual light gets turned on Shabbos, it is true, but it's still the direct causation from you having set the clock before Shabbos.
The candle was lit before Shabbos.
But it's still the same principle, though. It's still direct causation. You set the Shabbos clock before Shabbos, and now, inevitably, it turns and it reaches that time.
The circuit during Shabbos.
Doesn't matter.
Let me answer the question.
I mean, there is one opinion that says that not. But wait, let me just finish. Actually, let me just finish the thought. With that said, Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva where he says technically that may be true. However, he says when you get that you can use a Shabbos clock to do anything on Shabbos. However, he says when you get down to it, if you're going to go that way, literally you can do every malacha on Shabbos. It can't be possible that would be allowed. He says, in fact, if such things had existed in the time...
Why can't you do every malacha?
Because in principle, you could have any kind of machine or any kind of whatever run on a Shabbos clock. Never mind lights and air conditioners. You could have... You could have anything. So there, Rav Moshe actually goes so far as to say in this Shuvah that he brings...
Machine.
But it could. You could
not
set
automatic.
It on... Why not? You could set it on a timer.
But it's not automatic.
Why not?
Because it's not.
Okay.
Anyway, practically speaking...
Fine. He argues that it is. That practically speaking, any malacha could be done that way.
Sure,
let me talk, please. So he goes, Rav Moshe, goes so far as to say that if such things had existed in the times of Chazal, he says there's no question they would have answered it. So he says, fine, as far as turning on lights, fine, they had even back in the old days when they used candles, they had a teirim for having a goy light them or whatever, so therefore, fine, you know, you want to say, you want to use a Shabbos clock to turn on and off lights on Shabbos, maybe. But anything else, he takes a very hard line on.
So wait a minute, so then in that case, you don't light Shabbos candles because you could say exactly the same
thing. No, because again, candles are a hatayim. And again, the fact is, lighting Shabbos candles in and of itself is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. And the Nemuka Yosef's question is only based on isha mishum chitav, then how does that work? Okay. Once established that it's allowed, then it's allowed again. No, but you're not going to, the Rav Moshe says, you shouldn't go extend it to other malach. That's what he says. Okay.
Okay. What I'm saying is,
setting a VCR would be
Related to... When you do Eruv Tashlim, you have the Kavana or Eruv Shabbos. You do it before Shabbos, and it works still during Shabbos. So.
But the reason for that is because you're cooking the food on Eruv Shabbos, which is the first day of Yom Tov, second day of Yom Tov, whatever, in such a way that you could conceivably eat it on that day. Practically speaking, you're not. You're going to be eating it on Shabbos. It's not just a matter of kavana. You have to make it early enough in the day that, in principle, if you wanted to eat it on Friday, you could. Yes. Probably for the same reason. Yeah. Okay. Again, so the Moshe says the light is one thing, but for other things, No, so the light is a different thing. Again. That's fine. I'm saying even Moshe, who's machmir on everything else, is made for one light.
I have a timer. My light goes on. Eretz Shabbos, but it goes off.
Right. He's not everything. As far as what you can use Shabbos clocks for. He says most things not lights. Yes, I don't know what he'd say about air conditioners. All right. Anyway, let's get back to the Gemara. Omar Rava, Krol Masnis in the Sile of Rabbi Yochanan. We actually have a pasuk and a brisa that support the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that Isha is Mishum Chita, that it's considered like shooting an arrow with all the consequences that come from that. Krol, what's the pasuk that proved his point? Just see if the pasuk says, Ki Seitze Ish. The pasuk starts off, if fire goes out, implying Teitze Me'atma, implying that it goes out on its own. In other words, you set a fire. Teitze literally means it goes out. Now, Teitze is washing the cable, because Eish is washing the cable. A lot of inanimate things are washing the cable. Anyway, the point is, Teitze implies it's not you deliberately went and set the guy's pile of grain on fire. Teitze Eish implies you lit a fire in your backyard, and it spread, and ended up consuming his garbage. And Yishalim HaMavir HaTabera. And the pasuk continued that the one who set the fire is chayiv to pay for the fire. Setting the fire makes it sound as if he deliberately set the guy's haystack on fire. So we see that even though it takes him atma, nevertheless, the pasuk is considering you as if you actually lit the haystack on fire. That works well according to Isha Mishum Chita. That doesn't work so well according to Isha Mishum Mamone. Because again, according to Rish Lakish, literally in order to be chayiv for the haystack, you would have had to directly light it on fire. So therefore, the pasuk supports Rabbi Yochanan's point for it. Okay, Rish Lakish can understand that the pasuk is talking about two different scenarios, one where you deliberately lit the fire, one where it accidentally spread on its own. But yeah, the pasuk is more straightforward according to Rabbi Yochanan. Masnisa, where do we see a braisa that expresses what Rabbi Yochanan is saying? The time pasuk hakos benizgim amon. The Torah starts out talking about it in terms of mamon. Again, because it says kitetsa eish, which implies that the fire started spreading on its own, the equivalent of your shur going out on its own and causing damage. We see a benizgim guf. The pasuk finishes all by calling it a nezik that you did with your own guf. Again, by calling him a mavir, by calling him the one, by calling him an arsonist, basically the one who set the fire. Which teaches you exactly what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that isha mishum chitzav. So therefore, the Braita also supports what Rabbi Yochanan is saying very nicely. Okay. So now, based on all of this discussion, Abaya had a question. So far, all of the questions we had were on Mishlokish. We had a much more straightforward time, for the most part, explaining everything according to Rabbi Yochanan. But now we're going to have a question on Rabbi Yochanan's shita. We learned in the first perek, and later on when we discuss the dinim of Eish in the sixth perek, we're going to discuss in more detail, that when it comes to Eish, there's a special din called Tamun. There's a din that, for example, you light a fire which spreads to somebody else's property and burns down his haystack, you're chayav for the hay or the grain or whatever it is, but you're potter for Tamun. You're potter for anything that was hidden. That can include, for example, anything that was hidden inside the haystack. There's a case that the Gemara talks about in the sixth parak where you deliberately went and covered up the guy's field with a blanket, let's say, and then allowed your fire to spread, so now everything in the field is covered up. This is called tamun, and the Torah tells us that by mentioning godish or yakama or yasada, a haystack or standing grain or the field itself, all of which are exposed, none of them are tamun, and only those, the pasuk says you have to pay, that implies that your pasuk are tamun. The question is going to be, if we say Isha Mishum Chitav, that you set the fire and therefore you're responsible for all of the consequences that flow, all the direct consequences that flow from that, why should Tamun be any different? Kashale La Abaya. So Abaya had a strong question. Lamando Ama Isha Mishum Chitav. If you say, like Rabbi Yochanan, that Isha is that lighting a fire is the equivalent of shooting an arrow, and you're responsible for all the direct consequences of it, well, where do you have the case then when the Torah is saying that you're potter for Tamun? Where and why should he be potter for it? Tosfos explains the point is like this. If you say Ishim Shemamonai, like Rosh Lakish is saying, fine. Every one of the Nezikim, we said, has an exception. Shur has a Karen, has Tambrus, has Muad, Shane and Regal, Potter and Shotarabim, etc. All the various exceptions that he borrow your potter for Kalim, etc. So each one has its exceptions. Fine, okay, so another kind of nezik has its exceptions. If you say Isha Mishum Chitav, the Rabbi Yochanan, effectively what you're saying is Isha is sort of an extension of you yourself. The same way as a person himself shoots an arrow, you don't say that's a fifth kind of Avos Nezikin. Basically, it's just another form of Nezik of Adam. You shot the arrow. Eish, then, in that case, amounts to the same thing. It's you lighting the fire. And when it comes to Nizke Adam, when it comes to Nizakin that a person does, there's no difference whether there's no exceptions. Shoigig is just like Mazid, etc. So why would we think that there should be an exception? Why should there be an exception for Tamun? V'nichalei, and Rava continues, that Abaya was able to resolve it. He answered, yes, I can find you a case where actually you should be potter for Tamun. Suppose, for example, that the fire spread to the other guy's chaser, fine, but not yet to the haystack. At the time when the fire spread there, or even for example, he started in his own shul or whatever, there was a fence, there was a stone wall that would have stopped the fire. The nafla geder shalay machmas bleika. Then at that point, this wall around the chutzah fell down, nothing to do with the fire. If it fell down because of the fire, then obviously it's a continuation of chitzah. So you have the fire is in this chutzah. At this point, if the wall stayed standing, it would never spread over here. It would never spread to the guy's haystack or whatever. Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, there was an earthquake. Yeah, okay, like you said, there was an earthquake. One was up. So the wall falls down, and therefore that makes it possible for the fire to spread. And now it goes, continues burning, and ends up causing damage in the other chaser and burning down the guy's gadish, the guy's haystack. We're therefore, in that case, in that case, your arrow did not have the power to go that far to begin with. Again, the equivalent of shooting an arrow, where under normal circumstances, this arrow would only travel 50 feet, but all of a sudden a freak wind came and moved it 100 feet. By the same logic over here, your fire would have remained confined to the sculptor. All of a sudden there was this freak accident that the wall fell down. Now that's what makes it possible to spread. You can't say in that case that it's a matter of chitzav anymore, because it's not chitzav. Therefore, you can say that. Therefore, you can say Talmud would work over there. Okay. Question is, yachil in golu now we call it a chitzav. Fine, but then the question is, okay, then yeah, why are you pottering only Talmud? In that case, you should be potter for everything. It would be a clear case of oinah. So that doesn't work. Ella, no. Rather, what we have to answer is. You should know something. All this time we were assuming that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, each one has their own independent view of what Eish is, it's Chitzav or it's Mamonai, and neither one agrees with the other's position. Now we're saying that not. Actually, Rabbi Yochanan is saying it's a little bit of both. There is a Chitzav component to Eish, there's also a Mamonai component to Eish.
That's if you see that.
Because we
by one shita, you cannot resolve all cases, basically.
Yeah.
Either shita.
Right. So therefore, the Rabbi Yochanan, who says, Isha Mishum Chitzav, also agrees that there is a Mamona concept. There's a Mamona component. So in this case, when the wall all of a sudden unexpectedly fell down, it's true you can't be Mechayev him Mitzad Chitzav, but you can still say it's Mamona. Why is it Mamona? Because let's continue the scenario. What would happen, for example, if so the wall fell down, there was a freak earthquake or whatever, the wall fell down. Let's say before the fire spread to the next cluster, there would have been time enough for him to rebuild it. So again, if we said Mitzat Chitzav, you would still say he's potter. The fact is, when he lit the fire, there was no possibility of it spreading to the other chaser. The wall fell down at that point as an oinus. At that point, he has no further responsibility for what happened. Whereas if you say Mishum Mamonai, then you say he still retains a certain responsibility in the sense that if he had the capability to fix that wall and prevent the fire from spreading, he would have had to do so. And the fact that not makes him chayev. Dehasam shore hu v'lo tofach ba'afei, which in that case is the equivalent of, for example, having a shur in a barn and not locking the barn door and allowing the shur to go out and escape. In this case, you have the ability to lock the barn door by rebuilding the wall. You didn't. The fire, which is the equivalent of the shur, escaped and caused damage, and you're chayev.
But then you change the whole theory of what we said.
No, but that's what we're saying. We're saying ishe mishum chitav, but also mishum mamona.
That changes the whole
thing. No, it doesn't change the whole thing. Actually, it does and it doesn't. Wait, let's learn the next couple of lines, and then we'll talk about there's a number of different approaches that Rishonim have to talk about these last couple of lines. So we still say that Rish Lakish holds it exclusively Mamonai. So according to Rish Lakish, we would still need all the answers from before. Then in the case of the building burning down from the flaps, you still need that it was directly. No, and in general, all the previous cases that we talked about yesterday, Rish Lakish, you would still need all the various answers. According to Rabbi Yochanan, though, we're saying that in most of the other cases, things still work out fine. If you say Isha Mishum Chitzav, that's still reason enough to be Mechayev for the door burning down the haystack, which was the original case we had in Mishnah. It's also enough reason to be Mechayev the guy who had the camel loaded with flax for burning down the building. Again, you don't need a point of Yechanan that every part of the building was directly ignited by the flax. It can even be indirect. It's still Chitzav. Only in this case over here are you going to say in order to make the distinction of Tamun and not Tamun work, then you're going to need this scenario.
Everything is Isha Mechitzav except the Tamun.
Except when you deal with Tamun, then you, in order to explain the matter of Tamun, then that's where you need to bring in Mamonai. Yeah.
As opposed to Rish Lakish,
who says all Mamonai. Yeah. Okay. So the question is So the question is, v'chi me'acha demand the islam mishum chitzav, islam nami mishum mamonai, mai binayu. Fine, if you're going to say then that Rabbi Yochanan holds the both, that there's a chitzav component and a mamonai component, then what ends up being the actual difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish's opinion?
So
wait, okay. Now, the question is, what do you mean? What do you mean? What's the difference between them? Tosfos points out Rashi and Tosfos point out that you could answer. Tosfos in particular discusses it. What do you mean? The Gemara could answer my binai or all the things that we're mentioning so far. In all the cases you mentioned so far, Rabbi Yochanan would have one way of explaining it. Rish Lakish would have a different way of explaining it.
Can't you understand it as meaning when do you apply one and when do you apply the other?
No. My binayu means what's the machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. If Rabbi Yochanan holds of Rish Lakish's opinion as well, then where do you have a case? So Tosfos is saying the Gemara could have just answered, what do you mean, where do you have a difference? You have lots of differences. However, there is now the Rambam seems to have a different understanding because, in fact, you know, so what are we saying? I mean, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, Yishim Yishim Chita. However, we don't say this that we were saying that Tamun is exempted only in this odd case where there was a wall and then it fell down and you didn't rebuild it, et cetera, et cetera. The fact is, it started out as an onus, but it ended up being not because you could have rebuilt the wall. However, La Locha, the Rambam does not paskin that way. The Rambam paskin that you're always potter for Tamun regardless. Even if it was a normal case where you lit a fire and it was perfectly capable of spreading with a normal wind to the other guy's chaser and burning down his haystack, but there's stuff hidden inside the haystack or what have you, nevertheless, you're possible. How would that fit with our Gemara over here? What do you mean? The Torah tells us an exception for Tamun. By the Torah mentioning Godish, Oyakama, Oyasada, all of which are things that are out in the open, that teaches you your potter for things that are hidden. Later on, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that concept, but we're talking according to the Chacham, which the halacha is like. So how does that... Right, that's what I'm saying. So la halacha, how does that fit with our Gemara over here that the Gemara is limiting it only, that the Gemara is limiting the p'tur of Tamun only to this one oddball case
of
the wall, etc. Yeah. So there's a couple of different answers that the Noi Tekelim and the Rambam bring and that later Achronim talk about. In particular, the one way of looking at it is that what Rabbi Yochanan is saying effectively is that since the Torah tells us a Torah of Mamon, therefore only in that case can you apply Mamon. Every other case you have to apply the rule of Chitza. Only when it comes to Tamun, but any kind of Tamun. Any kind of Tamun, you apply the different rule and say Mamon. And therefore you don't need this Doichach answer over here that you're talking about wall, etc. Once you come out that way, then when the Gemara says my binayu, then the Gemara couldn't have answered ikke binayu the case of Tamun, because in fact Rabbi Yochanan would say that you are chayiv, that you are rather Rabbi Yochanan would say that you're potter in Tamun in all cases, and Rish Lakish would also hold that way. Both of them end up saying mamona in that case. So therefore, the question becomes my binayu. So okay, you could still say the Gemara could have given all the other cases, but still the Gemara wants to find in a case where we say we also mentioned at the beginning of the sugya, Rashi holds that the whole question over here comes down to was the original fire or the original coal that it belonged to you or not, or was it your responsibility to guard it or not? Now some of the cases we had so far wasn't necessarily. The case of the store, for example, it wasn't you, the Bala Gummel's responsibility to guard the candle. You, the candle belongs to the storekeeper. It was inside his store. The case of the dog and the Harara, the coal wasn't yours either. According to Tosfos' way of looking at it, it wasn't yours to guard, which is going to be the next piece of Gemara talking about.
His candle
set it all on fire, but we're making the Bala Gomo Chayev because he overloaded his camel. Fine, but the actual, that nothing would have happened if it hadn't been for the candle. It's not his candle to guard. So therefore, in other words, the point is the Bala Gomo. Therefore, the Gemara is seeking a way to say, even when we have, where the fire is definitely under your control, when the fire is definitely under your control and it's your responsibility to prevent it, what is a case that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish would be arguing about, and where one would say you're chayev and one says you're potter. Again, all the other cases, it doesn't really work because the candle or the coal or whatever is not necessarily yours or yours to guard. The case of Tamun, according to this last explanation, doesn't work because both of them hold your puzzle on Tomun. Again, because both of them agree you apply the rule of moment. So now we got to figure. Well, that's what we got to figure out. So when the coal doesn't belong to you, sure, there's a lot of differences between them. When the coal belongs to you, what is the nafkamina between them? And the answer is l'chayv ba'avad dvarim. The answer is they would be arguing what happens if your fire. All this time we're talking about your fire damaged somebody's property. What happens if your fire actually injured somebody? Somebody's hand got burnt in it. Well. Later on in the Masechta, we talk about that if one person injures another, and again, doesn't matter for Shogeg or Bemezid, because all the more Larlam, then you chayev, we know, for up to five kinds of payments, besides for Nezek, which is payment for the actual damages. There's also Sar, the payment for the pain, Rivui, doctor's bills, Sheves, time off work, and Boshes, embarrassment. Would that apply over here? If you set a fire, which ended up causing damage to somebody else's body, would you be chayev for these other things? So Rashi says, well, for Nez, for Tsar, Ripui, etc. Rashi says, by the way, Dalet Dvarim means everything except Boshes. So it means Nezek, Tsar, Ripui, Shevet. Rashi says, not Boshes, because Boshes, you have to have done it deliberately. And here we're talking about it was an accident. Rabbi Nachanan learns differently. He says, Dalet Dvarim means everything except for Nezek. Nezek, of course, Rukhaya. That's what everybody agrees to that. The question is the other four things, Tsar, Ripui, Shevet, and Boshes. Anyway, the point is, how would that apply to this machloikas of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechanan? If we say Isha Mishum Chitav, then again the fire is considered an extension of you yourself. Well, the same way as if you yourself went and chopped off the guy's hand, you'd be chayav for all the penalties. So also if your fire did it. Whereas if you say Isha Mishum Mamonai, your Ish is the equivalent of your Shur or what have you causing damage. Well, your putter on Tsar and Rifui and Sheves and Boshes, if your Shur injures somebody, the same way. According to the Shluch, you should be putter if your fire injures somebody for those things. So that's the Ikka B'Nai, that's the difference. Even when it's your coal and your responsibility to guard it, then it depends whether we look at it as Mishum Isha or Mishum Chitav.
According to Rishakish, why was he puttering when it's not you directly?
Because it's like your mama, and it's like your shore going and causing injury. It's like your mama. And your mom and causing injury, you're chayav for nezek, but you're potter for all the other things. You're potter for tsar, for rifui, etc.
When it's your
mom that causes it. Whereas when it's you directly that causes it, you're chayav. So Rabbi Yochanan takes the view that lighting a fire is the equivalent of you doing it directly. Yeah.
And
Rish Lakish would say it's the equivalent of your mom. Now, the Gemara continued, the Mishnah continued, that, again, this case of, again, a dog picked up a charora, this cake, this loaf of bread baked on the coals, with coals still attached to it. He takes it over to a goddish, he eats the charora, he takes the coal over to a goddish, to a pile of grain, and sets it on fire. So he said, for the Mishnah said, for the charora, al charora misham, he said, the charora, he's responsible for paying nezek shalim, because it's normal for a dog to eat a charora. And for the stack of grain, he pays chatzi nezek. So either because it's unusual or because it's service, which according to the two different ways of looking at it. So, first of all, you might ask man chayev when we say that you're chayev to pay for the haystack. Evidently, Baal Kelev. Evidently, you're saying the owner of the dog is going to be chayev for paying chatzi nezek for the haystack. Again, either because it's like Karen, because it's unusual for a dog to take a coal and drop it on there or whatever, or because it's Tzroris, because it's an indirect thing, as we discussed before. We also had previously, we had a few days ago, the opinion of Rebbe Lozo and a Braiser who said you actually hide Nezek Shalem. Anyway, that's not the halacha. The question, what we're going to focus on over here is, when you get down to it, the owner of the dog, obviously, you have the two different people who were involved in burning down this haystack. The one who owns the dog, because his dog went and brought the coal there, but the one who owns the coal also. So the question is, why don't we also say that the one who owns the coal is chayev as well? On the face of it, he was careless. He allowed a strange dog to wander in and take his charora with coals attached.
Nobody would have gachelis to
that. The point is, the same as anything else, you're obligated to guard it. The same way, anything that you have capable of causing damage, shmiros and alasa, as we said in the first mishnah of the Masechta, you're responsible to guard it to guard the gachelas, to make sure that that animal can't wander in and pick up a gachelas and then cause fires with it. So Rashi points out the question comes according to both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, regardless whether you say isha mishum chitzav or isha mishum mamayna. Again, we said that we finished off saying before that Rabbi Yochanan does agree there is a mamayna concept. So fine, you can't say isha mishum chitzav because this is a dog taking the gachelas and a dog shooting chitzav. Maybe you're not responsible for mitzroris at best, whatever. But if you look at it from the point of view of mamayna, the fire was your mamayna, then why aren't you responsible for not having guarded it? So, okay, we should say then, let's say, for example, so Rashi explains then, we should say the owner of the dog will pay chatzi nezik because it was either keren or tzroris, as the case may be, and the owner of the gachelos, of the coal, will have to pay the other half. Why don't we say that? Tosfos discusses actually that
because the owner of the gachelos.
Yes. What?
The owner of the gachelos. That's the one who had the kikar.
Yeah, but
he wasn't doing anything wrong.
But he was careless with his gachelos. He was careless with his gachelos.
Why was he careless?
Because he put the gachelos. He put the gachelos in a place where dogs are able to come and get it.
A dog can get in all sorts of places.
And that's what the Gemara is going to answer. Wait. Okay. Tosfos discusses maybe even a different possibility. Maybe you should say actually that the owner of the dog is only chayav for a quarter of the nezek. Anyway, whatever.
I think he'd be chayav at all. The owner of the dog
you should say that the owner of the dog is going to be partially potter for what the owner, let's say the owner of the gachelas himself is only chayav for chatzi nezek, let's say.
Why should the owner of the dog be partially potter?
Because the owner of the dog, I mean, the dog came and got there and took the charoro with the coal, fine. But again, if the other guy hadn't been careless with it, the coal, after all, is what caused the fire. The dog is what brought it. Okay, whatever.
This is a place where he...
Fine, okay. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting story.
That's to prove that he was careless.
Okay, well, Tosfos points out an interesting thing, by the way, which is we see from this
the fact question, that this guy wasn't watching the dog.
We see
that's clear.
Tosfos says we see an interesting point. We see an interesting point in Jinni Nezikin from this question. We see Tosfos says you have to be more careful to not cause other people a hezek than to make sure that you are not caused a hezek. Namely, you, the owner of the gachelas, are more responsible to make sure that a dog doesn't come in and get your gachelas, more so than the dog had no business getting in there in the first place. But then nevertheless you're going to be chayev to watch the gachelas. So the answer is exactly the shishimer gachalter. The answer is yes. The guy did take care of his gachelas. He did take care of his coal.
Shishimer
when he watched it. He had it in a safe place. Rashi says he locked his doors, for example. He locked his doors. The charoro with the coals on it was inside of the house. Fine, at that point.
Through a window, he jumped in.
Then the question is, ikishima gachalte my boy kelapalsam. Fine, in that case, how did the dog get in? And the answer is bishachosar. The answer is the dog dug in under the door, underneath the door.
Dogs do that.
Which, in that case, Tosfos says, in that case,
that's
the point. So that Tosfos says, therefore, since you locked the door, that's all you need to do. When it comes to Nezakin, you need to take reasonable precautions. You're not expected to plan for every possible contingency. As long as you locked the door, yes, it's true, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, that dogs can normally tunnel under doors. But you did what could be done.
The dog coming was a lioness.
That's basically what we're saying. Based on this, we can deduce. In that case, then we can say, based on that, it means that stam a door can be considered something that a door will be able to tunnel underneath. So again, we're not going to make the owner of the gachelas chayev because he did what's reasonable. He locked his door. But when it comes to looking at the chiyuv of the owner of the dog, then we're going to say he should expect that his dog is going to tunnel under other people's doors.
Keep it on the chain.
Yeah. And therefore, you can't say that the dog getting in is considered something unusual and it should be considered keren. No, the dog getting into the other guy's house is and finding the charora and eating it is all perfectly normal. Therefore, nezek shalom for the charora. We're saying chatzi nezek for the gadish only because that may be tsuros or maybe maybe mishuna or whatever. But the actual getting into the house and grabbing the charora is perfectly normal behavior for a dog. So Mitzad, the owner of the house where the gachelus was, he did what's reasonable, locking his door. It's not his problem, the fact that dogs are able to tunnel on me.
Are they considered more, the dogs?
Yes, I mean, well, as far as it depends for what. I mean, as far as Shane and Rego, yeah, animals are more Shane. Yeah, this is considered part of the normal behavior of Shane. This is considered Shane, because the dog ate the harara, yeah. So now the next question becomes, where exactly did this dog eat this charora that you're making him chayev, that you're making the owner of the dog chayev to pay nezek shalom for it? Ilema da'ochla begodesh da'alma? Is it that it took the charora from Reuven's house and ate it in Shimon's property? Because it makes a difference. Wait. If it ate it on somebody else's godish, it took it from Reuven's house and dragged it over to Shimon's godish and ate it over there. What we said, we talked about before, that you need to have, there needs to be Rishus HaNizik, and you don't have Rishus HaNizik over here, because the Charora was eaten in somebody else's Rishus. But Ashama means that and somebody else's Godish. What? Well, obviously private, but we mean Da'alma, not Da'alma as in the sense of Hefker, Da'alma meaning of somebody else, not the owner of the Charora.
Yeah.
Because Steyacha means the Rishus of the Nizik. And here, hold on. There's two different nezakim over here, remember. There's the nezak of a harora, and then there's the nezak of the gadish. For the moment, we're focusing on the harora. In order to be chayev nezak shalim for that harora, the dog has to have eaten it in the rishus of the nezak, meaning the owner of the harora. Well, if he took it to somebody else's gadish, then it's not rishus a nezak anymore. So why would he be chayev? He'd be potter for eating the harora. The lekka, because you don't have, otherwise you don't have, it's not the deacha. The answer is, loitzricha da'ocha begodesh shabal harara. Fine, assume that the harara and the godish both belong to the same person. So Reuven's dog tunneled into Shimon's house, where Shimon had his door locked, found the harara over there, schlepped it over to Shimon's own godish, ate it over there, somewhere on Shimon's property, and lit the godish on fire. In that case, the Gemara says, based on that, Chipshite, then in that case, since you're saying that you make him pay for the charora, you can prove from that the pi para kachatsar hanizik dam. You can prove from that the mouth of the cow, or in this case the dog, is considered like the chatsar hanizik. Let's first learn the words of the Gemara. Let's first learn the initial words of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about a couple of different malachim, a couple of different approaches that Rishonim have to explain this Gemara.
The question is what?
The question is that the Gemara is going to discuss now a question. Slow down. When you have an animal eating somebody else, when you have an animal eating somebody's pears, on the one hand, the obvious thing to say is, on the face of it, the obvious thing to say is, fine, you know, the animal is standing in Rishos HaNizik, the pears over there in Rishos HaNizik, of course, it's taking place in Rishos HaNizik. On the other hand, the Nizik doesn't have Rishos over the inside of the animal's mouth. Maybe that should be considered Rishos HaMazik.
Huh?
Again, let's first learn the words of the Gemara, then we'll talk about a couple of different approaches that Rishonim have to explain it. Yeah, it sounds very strange when you put it that way. So let's first learn a couple of lines, then we'll talk about a few different ways that we'll deal with understanding.
Nizik is the one who suffered
the damage. Right.
Now,
what we're saying is like this. We're taking it as a given that when this dog goes and eats this charora on the goddish of that also belongs to the owner of the charora, we're saying that's considered Rishos HaNizik. Because again, if it wasn't Rishos HaNizik, he wouldn't be paying for the charora. The problem with that is, that is not a problem, But in that case, then we have an answer to the question, which the Gemara is going to discuss now, this question. Do we say that the mouth itself of the animal is considered Rishos HaMavik? It's considered Chatzar HaMavik. We would have a way to say that, wait. Because if you were to say that the mouth of the animal, the dog in this case, is considered like the chatzar of the mazik, then shouldn't the owner of the dog have the ability to say to the owner of the charara, my boy riftach b'puma de kaboy, what is your bread doing in my dog's mouth?
Oh, come on.
Hold on. We're going to explain a couple of different approaches that Mephoshim have once we get through the initial question and answer.
Why do you have to go so far?
Wait. Because in fact the Yeshivalite had a question. What do we consider the mouth of the parah? When a parah goes and eats peiros, what is it considered? So therefore, now based on the case of shame.
Really?
So therefore, right. So the question is, and therefore the Gemara asks right back. What did he even have a question for? Of course, if the animal's mouth is considered a chatzar mazik, how would you ever have a case of shame? Any case where an animal eats somebody else's hair is... Didn't I say that? You're right. Shame the chiyav rachmana hechem ashkachas. Well, how would you ever have a case of shame where you're chayav? Any case where an animal goes and eats somebody's peiros, you would say, well, it's my animal's mouth. It has a right to have things in its mouth. What are your peiros doing with it?
Hold on.
Slow down. Let's get through the initial. You'll see there's logic. Just a minute. Just give me a couple of minutes so that we can try to explain logic.
Half an hour you got.
Listen. Okay. So, Omer of Mari, Breder of Kahana. So, Mari, Breder of Kahana. Actually, I can find you a case of Shane where, even according to the supposition that the mouth itself is considered Chatzar HaMazik, I can find you an example of Shane where you'd unquestionably be hired for. For example, the tullus of shame that we talked about in the first paragraph. For example, an animal rubbing against the wall where it's enjoying it, it's scratching itself, and feeling better. That's a tullus of shame. And obviously, there's nothing inside its mouth. It's a tilde of shame because shame is anything where the animal has hana, and it's a normal thing for it to do. The tin for peiros for hanasa. Or another example where duty peiros for its pleasure, and Rashi mentions over here, which Rashi mentioned every previous time that we mentioned this concept, doesn't mean that the animal defecated on it or whatever. That was a case we talked about the other day. Rather, we're talking about the animal rolled around on them, like again, to scratch itself or to cool itself off or whatever, which again is part of, not dough, peiros, which again is a hana for it. And in those cases, you don't have pee. There's no pee parah involved. So those you could say are considered shame. So maski for marzutra. So marzutra says if you're going to say that that's what the case of shame is limited to, only those kinds of things, and not actual eating, because you're going to argue maybe that eating is considered tachasara mazik. What about v'habay ina kasha yivara gola tumer v'leka? What about, we learned near the beginning of the Masechta, that where do we learn the whole concept that when the Torah says revir v'stay after, how do we learn from that the nezik of shein in the first place? Is because the Torah used the word revir, and we understand from Pasuk in Malachim that beer means to consume completely, kasha yivara gola tumer, like the teeth of an animal consume something until it's all gone. We had over there a few different possibilities, but gola means whatever. The point is, it means it's completely gone, completely consumed. Is not completely destroying. The wall is not completely destroyed. The peiros are not completely destroyed. And in principle, they can be washed off. They're damaged, but not destroyed yet. The answer is Ravina Amad Shaf Tzami. Ravina says, I can find you an example. Yes, suppose an animal scratches itself against the wall, and as it's doing it, let's say there was a painting on the wall, or there was a relief on the wall. No, not the wall itself. We're not talking the wall itself collapsing. We're talking the painting was rubbed out.
The decorations,
whatever, were rubbed out. That's completely gone. Ravashi, I'm going to pass up a story. And similarly, Ravashi says, as far as the rolling around on Paris, the tin for Paris, yes, you could have, for example, let's say that by doing that, it got them deep into the mud, and now you can't get them out anymore. Or Rashi brings another explanation that it means, let's say, let's say it wasn't Paris, let's say it wasn't food, let's say it was liquid, and the animal knocked it over and spilled it as it's rolling around. You're never getting that liquid back, that's for sure. The Talia Karina, the whole Karin is gone. And therefore, with those, you could argue then, so there you have, there is cases of Shane where there's no mouth of an animal involved, so you can't say the mouth of my animal is my rishus. Yet it's Shane, they're told us of Shane, and there is Kasha Yavara, Gola Trumay, there's something that was completely destroyed and irretrievable. Now, so okay, so the obvious question. That's a way that.
When the animal eats it, it's nothing.
Hold on. Now let's start explaining. So now, the point of these last couple of lines was, the Gemara is saying, there is a logical way that you could argue that the mouth of the para, or the dog, or what have you, is considered your rishus, the mazik rishus. And you'd be potter for what it eats, and yet there is a concept of shame that you'd be chayav for. Now, so the obvious question is that logical? We're talking about over here, for example, in our Mishnah, a dog actually taking the charora. What's the logic that the owner of the dog would have the ability to say, "What's your bread doing in my dog's mouth?" The dog itself took it. There's a couple of different approaches in Mefarshim. One is. Rashi, at least on the surface, though of course we'll explain Rashi differently, but at least on the surface, Rashi and a couple of other Rishonim say that, yes, the Gemara means exactly that. That in many cases, you might say that you don't have, that you're not chayav for shame. You would have to find some unusual circumstances in order to be chayav, in order to be chayav for shame, as the Gemara is saying over here. On the other hand, Tosfos talks about, no, if the animal itself takes the thing, then there's no question. Of course, you can't say its mouth is considered Rishos HaNizik. We're talking about, let's say, for example, some Tosfos says, let's say somebody who is not a bar chiyuv, let's say a cheresh shoyt v'katan, who are not responsible for any nizakim that they do. Let's say they go and put the food into the animal's mouth. The animal didn't take it itself. So one way of looking at it is you could argue, nevertheless, the animal is in Rishus HaNizik, and it's eating in Rishus HaNizik, therefore it doesn't matter who put the food in its mouth, you, the owner of the animal, are still going to be chayav. Or, you could argue that not. You could argue that it's not completely different. The point is, that would be the case where you could say, my boy, what is your bread doing in my dog's mouth? My dog is eating it. True. But the one who put it there is not a bar chiyu. Therefore, you can't hold
me. The dog didn't grab it and say it.
That's the point. That's the point, according to Tosfos. That's the point of the Gemara's question.
The dog himself went.
Exactly, that's what Tosfos is saying. If the dog itself goes and takes the charora, no question you have for it eating the charora. There's no question that's shame. The question is, if somebody else who themselves is not a bar chiyuv puts it in the dog's mouth, then maybe the dog's owner has the ability to say, you know what, it's not my problem that this charora got eaten. Or maybe not. Maybe you say, nevertheless, your dog ate it, and therefore it doesn't matter who put it in the dog's mouth. The fact is, your dog ate it, and it was in my resource, and therefore you're chayav. That's Tosfos' approach. Then there's also, there's a number of other approaches among Rishonim and Achronim. One more that the Raivad talks about, that if the Charoro, or whatever other Paris, were in the Rishus HaNizik the whole time, then again, there's no question. Of course, you're chayav. Your dog had no business being in that rishus in the first place. The question rather would be similar to something that we talked about in the Gemara the other day. If it started out in one rishus and then was brought into a different rishus, let's say the dog picked up the thing in Rishus HaRabim, brought it into Rishus HaNizik, and started eating it there, then maybe you have the ability to argue that, you know what, it started out in Rishus HaRabim. When it came into your rishus, it was in my dog's mouth. My dog, no, not you should have been guarding your rishus. No, we're not even talking about that. The point is that my dog had the right to be in Rishus HaRabim.
Nobody can find that.
Listen, my dog picked up a charora that was in Rishus HaRabim, but then it brought it into your rishus. You're the owner of that. It depends. If we say that the dog's mouth is considered chatzar nizik, then he has a valid argument. It never went into your rishus in the first place. When it was brought into your property, it was already in my dog's mouth, and therefore I should be butter. Whereas if you say that the dog's mouth is not considered rishus hamazik, that it's still part of rishus hamizik, because the dog is in there, then you will be chayav.
He would be butter anyway, because the dog got it. What's it doing in rishus hamazik?
No, because we talked about the other day. It's Galgo. We were talking about the case the other day in the Gemara. If the thing rolled or the animal rolled it from one rishus to another, whether you
animal rolled. not
well,
this, the role by itself.
Well, no, but in other words, the case.
The case of the bear was
that the thing started out in one resource, and then the animal brought it into another resource. Toaster said it didn't even have to be that the animal brought it. It could even be it rolled by itself. So this would be a similar kind.
It's a different idiom. Right. That's an idiom.
Normally we saw in Ruvin that a Rishur seems to be a certain
sign. No, first of all, the dinim for Rishur as far as Shabbos are different than the dinim as far as Rishur. No. Yeah, as far as the dinim of Shabbos, yeah. But actually not even. No. You know what? If I remember correctly, in Hilchos Shabbos, we talk about over there that if you threw something intending for a dog to catch it, then you're considering as if that dog now is life of space, Arba Alava, because you want it to land after there. And therefore, you'd be fine. See, the dinim of Rishuyas and Shabbos are different than the dinim than Rishuyas as far as Nezikin, anyway. So it doesn't really matter whether it's Dalal Dalal.
You're arguing that the outcomes could be very different depending on the
depending on how
the dog is
right. That's the point. Yeah. So now, based on our Mishnah, we seem to be able to prove one way or the other. But again, so you have the different approaches. Does the Gemara literally mean that many cases of Shane are taken not chayav, only the limited cases that the Gemara is saying over here, or because the mouth might be considered Rishus Hamad? If you say the mouth is considered Rishus Hamad, then you would have a very limited case. Then you'd have a very limited set of cases where you're chayav for Shane. Really, only cases where the mouth is not involved, like the animal rolling around or whatever. On the other hand, again, according to Tosfos, or according to the Ravid, or according to a number of other approaches in Rishonim and Achronim, you can say the Gemara doesn't mean to limit it to only those cases. The Gemara is saying, according to your Svara, you Machshin, who thinks that way, that fine, I'll explain it according to you. But the fact is, Shane does have a broader application. There are cases where there's no question you can't say the mouth is Rishus Hamazik. But there are cases where maybe you could say that. Again, such as like Tosfos is saying somebody else put it in his mouth, or like the Ravid is saying it itself brought a commercial sedabim and Rishus Hamazik.
What is the Rishus Hamazik?
Well, we know that all mezakin and Rishus Hamazik you potter. We established that already. If you're in your own Rishus and a shur comes in and your shur gores it, or somebody brings in pears and your shur eats them or whatever you potter, because what are your pears or your shur or what have you doing in my Rishus?
In my Rishus, Hamazik is. That potters me, basically.
And the fact that I'm the magic own this rishus makes me potter. Yeah. That's what we're arguing over here. Can the mouth be considered my rishus?
In my rishus, if it's my rishus anida.
If it's rishus anida, you're going to be chayav. That's the point. But if it's rishus magic, you're going to be potter. That's the question. Can we say that there are cases where it's rishus magic? So again, according to Rashi, and I think also the Tosfos Reed and some others, the Gemara means to give that a fairly. If you say it's rishus magic, that has a fairly broad application. According to most of the other Rishonim and Achronim, it has a much narrower application. There are certain cases where we could argue that.
But most of them not.
The Gemara continues on this topic. Toshma, come, let's see if we can prove that the mouth of the animal is considered Rishus Hamazik or Rishus Hamizik from a case as follows. If somebody goads a dog to bite somebody, Shisabayat HaNachash, or he goads a snake to bite somebody, and Rashi says, actually,
how do you go to snake?
I don't know. Mishasa, though, doesn't mean, there's a difference between Mishasa versus the next thing, which is Hishik. Hishik is, for example, you actually pick up the snake and put its fangs to the guy's skin. Mishasa is basically you rape on. You're excited. You wave a red tape in front of it or whatever you do to arouse snakes. Yeah, whatever. You know what I mean. You know what I mean. And then,
I don't know. I don't know what to do with snakes.
Me, but whatever. They're evidently, there's someone. Potter. So then we're saying you potter.
I don't think the guy has to put the fangs onto the person.
Yeah, no,
all he has to do is throw the snake onto the guy.
Hold on.
That's enough.
Listen.
That snake is going to bite him.
If he's just holding it and goading it to do it, he's potter. So you have to ask, man potter, mishasa potter. Evidently, the point is the one who goaded the dog to bite is going to be potter. V'chayev baal kelev. Evidently, then, though, you're saying the owner of the dog is going to be higher for the damage that it caused. Now, we am a chatara mazik domi. Again, if you're going to argue that the mouth of the dog is considered chatara mazik, lame a lay, then again, let him be able to argue
my boy Yodach performed a kabbai. Same idea. What is your hand doing in my girl's mouth? Again, according to the various approaches that we mentioned, the Gemara may mean, for example, according to Tosfos, here you have somebody else putting the, you have somebody else goading the dog to do the biting. Therefore, the owner of the dog himself has the ability to argue, my dog didn't go do it voluntarily. He was goaded into it. So therefore I should be puzzled. Therefore, the owner of the dog, should be puzzled. Yet the Mishnah seems to be implying that the owner of the dog is chayav. Why? Because it said that she supposed a kelev, she supposed a nachash. We said potter, implying the one who did the goading is potter. Evidently, the owner of the dog would be chayav.
Why would? Well, I don't know.
The answer is no.
The one who does the goading should be chayav.
But no, because it's only a grum. The grum of a nezakin.
All right, let me illustrate a case.
We have to keep things brief. We still have to go.
It's a very interesting case.
Okay, but there is such a thing as grum of a nezakin. There is, by the way, we'll talk as we go through the Masechta, we'll see various times you have grum, especially in the last nezakin, we're going to have this grum and this
diamond. Can you propose a scenario?
Can you propose a scenario later?
Okay.
I'm sorry. If we had more time, would be one thing. But yeah.
Okay. We never have time.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Okay. So the answer is Ema Potter Af Meshaseh. No, you have to explain. It's not the one who goaded his Potter, implying the owner of the dog is high. Both of them are Potter. The one who goaded his Potter because it was only grum. The owner of the dog is Potter for this reason. You could argue he's Potter because he could say that my dog didn't do it on its own. What?
Grama.
Grama means indirect causation. Meaning, when you go to a dog to bite somebody, it's not a given, it's not an absolute certainty that it's going to bite. It may or may not.
It's service.
What?
Like purse.
No, service is different.
A snake is going to bite. The question is it poisonous?
If you put its fangs to the guy's skin,
no,
yes, that's the next.
You throw a snake at a person.
Meshaseh does not mean that you throw it. It means that you hold it and somehow you goad it into biting. You anger it enough.
If you're throwing enough, it'll be angry.
We didn't say throwing it, though. You're coming up with this concept of throwing.
Because,
I don't know what you're getting at.
It's the same thing as putting the fangs on the guy's
no,
throat.
No, but that's the next case. The Ibaisema, or I can give you another answer, that Meshaseh does not actually mean, that the Meshaseh does not just mean goading the dog, as in trying to get it angry, but actually, you could say that it's talking about that you bared the dog's teeth and scratched the guy with it. So you didn't actually stick the hand into his mouth, but the damage took place on the outside of the dog's mouth. Again, this is all, if we say that pipara, that the mouth of the animal is considered a shosamad, Toshma, come the proof in the next case in the mission over there. Hishich b'yisanochosh, what happens if you actually made the snake bite the person, meaning you literally took it in your hand and put its fangs to the guy's skin, and dug it into the guy's skin, and he bit him and he died. Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev, a chacham poter. Rabbi Yehuda is Mechayev Misa. For killing the guy, the Chachamim say you're potter. Ve Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, and Rav Acha Bar Yaakov explains in the Gemara in Sanhedrin over there. If you analyze this machlokes, you come out as follows. According to Rav Yehuda, the poison of the snake is already between his teeth. So you don't even need, the snake does not even need the snake's teeth. Meaning the snake does not need to have any kind of intent to harm for him to poison this guy. Just the
when
fact.
When it bites, the glands shoot out.
Exactly. In other words, some other one person took the snake and dug its fangs into the guy's skin, the venom is going to come out automatically. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to be chayav. You directly killed the guy, the equivalent of stabbing him.
Absolutely.
As opposed to the Dibre Chachamim, Eres Nachash Me'atmi Meki, as opposed to, according to Chachamim, the snake voluntarily ejects its venom. And there, it depends on the kind of snake, it depends on the circumstances, whatever. Anyway, listen.
Still talking about
Hishnaki Shnerbi. No.
Theoretically, a person can hold a snake by its head.
Yeah.
If this person knows how to handle it.
Those are not good, but here we're talking about the fangs are actually
put
about
that on the guy's
neck
or whatever. That person, if it's poisonous snake, that person is dead.
Not necessarily.
If it's poisonous, he's dead.
Can we continue? Lefichach nachash b'skila u'makish pater. Therefore, actually, according to the Chacham and Taket, the nachash is going to be chayef skila, just like a shur that killed a person is chayef skila, because he did it on his own volition. Not b'chir chakras, snakes don't have b'chir, but whatever. It had the ability. It wasn't a given that it's gonna eject venom. It did it on its own. Okay. And the one who put the fangs over there is going to be Potter because it was sort of a grump. Now, relating that back to our case, if you're going to tell me that the mouth, the para, is considered like chatzara mazik, again, you could argue that the owner of the snake should have the ability, again, not necessarily the one who's putting the fangs over there, why, whether he is or not, doesn't matter. Again, the owner of the snake should argue, the mouth of the snake is my rishus, your hand has no right to be in here. And the answer is, maybe, but even if we say that a mouth of the animal is considered like a chatzara mazik, we don't say that when it comes to chiyuv misa. We don't say that when it comes to chiyuv misa. Dinei mominus, yes, but not chiyuv misa. Actually, Rashi says that inikatola doesn't mean killing the person, because again, the halacha is like the chachamim that makish potter. We mean that the nachash is not going to be, you're not going to give the nachash skila on that base.
No, the
bala nachash isn't punished anyway. We're talking about the nachash itself is not going to get skila. And where do you get that distinction? The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, if somebody goes into somebody's chotzer without permission, and the shur of the owner kills him and he dies, gores him and he dies, the shur does get skila. However, the owner is a potter from paying kofer.
Because
well, Bailam Turim and Akofer, my time. And now, why should the owner be potter from Kofer, even if the animal was a moored, my time? And Amalei Vershusi, my body. Because the owner has the ability to say, what are you doing in my Rishus? In that case, you should ask, Shur and Amalei Mele, my body, Rishusi. Then why does the Shur get skewed? You could say the same logic, what are you doing coming into my Rishus without permission? Elele, in its trouble, I am written. Evidently, when it comes to whether the animal is going to be Chayiv Nisa or not, we don't make that distinction. An animal killed a person, he's Chayiv skill regardless. Therefore, that's what we're saying. So therefore, true, maybe we could argue that the P Nachash is considered like Chatzara Mazik. Nevertheless, the Nachash is still going to have to get skilled, because after all, it did kill a person. Gemara finishes off with the case. Hanu Izi de Beit Tarbu, there were goats in Beit Tarbu, the name of a family. They were causing damage to Rabbi Yosef's fields or whatever.
The goats.
Amalei Abaya, so he says to Abaya, who is a Talmud, I guess. So he says to Abaya, Zil Emel, who is a Talmud, Zil Emel, who is a Talmud, go tell the owner of these goats that they should put them away. They need to keep them locked up. Amalei, so Abaya tells him, Amai Ezel, why should I bother going? The Iazilna, if I go and tell them you need to keep your goat locked up, I'm really ligda magdira bare. Why won't they argue right back and say, you know what, you should put a fence around your property? Now, okay, so Abaya is saying that. The question then becomes, the Godar, so fine, if you're going to say you're responsible to put up a fence, Shane the Chir Rahmana Hesmashkafla, by that logic, again, how would you ever be chayef for Shane? When an animal wanders into your property, if an animal wanders into your property because there was no fence, according to Abaya's Svara, shouldn't the owner of the animal have the ability to say, if you had a fence up, you wouldn't have gotten in? And the answer is, Kshachosra, one case could be, for example, the animal dug under the fence, like we talked about on Amad Allah for the dog. Inami,
do not don't do that.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But whatever, the point is, we're not talking about...
They'll jump over the fence.
Fine. The point is, it could have had a way to get it. Besides, we're not only talking about goats. This particular case, we're talking about goats, but we're talking more generally. Inami did not for good of Leoya. Or another case could be, let's say the wall fell down at night, you didn't discover until the goats had already gotten in. Now, but is the halacha like a buyer in that regard or not? Most Rishonim, Tosfos and most other Rishonim say, most of them say that no. Abaya was using an excuse. He didn't want to go deal with these people. But really, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, that doesn't matter whether you put up a fence or not. So the owner of the goat is going to be responsible to keep them locked up. There are some Rishonim who learn that the halacha is like Abaya. Like Abaya that would say you don't have a fence around your Rishus, then you have no claims for Nezakim or Shein. No, based on Abaya, based on the fact that Rabbi Yosef didn't refuse Abaya. He didn't tell him, you know, you need to go anyway because this is whatever. So the Gemara finishes off. Mach was Rabbi Yosef, v'itema Rabba. Rabbi Yosef, or some say Rabba, made the following announcement. Those people who go up to Eretz Yisrael from Babel and those people who come down from Eretz Yisrael to here should know the following halacha. This is an important halacha to know. Hani izi the shukah de mapsidi. If you have goats that the butchers have set aside, they plan to shech them, but they're waiting until market day because then the meat will be able to be sold more easily and they'll get a higher price for it.
The mapsidi, also, they'll be fresh.
That's true, yeah. Also true, yeah. The mapsidi, where if these goats are causing damage, masrin and b'marayu tshrei tlossazim, then what we do is we warn the owner of the goat two or three times, your goats are causing damage, you better do something about it. Eat sayas sayas, so if he listens and keeps the goats locked up or whatever, good. The Eloi, and if not, Amrin Lay, then we tell him, Tiv Amasachta, go stand by the butcher shop, the Kabul Duzach, and get your money. Meaning, in other words, Rashi learns, Rashi explains, you are going to be responsible because you didn't watch this animal and keep it from causing damage. Like this, you want to save it till market day so you can have an easier time selling the meat. But because it's causing damage and you're not taking care of it, you're going to have to shecht it right now. And then you'll have to find, you'll be responsible for finding buyers out of season. It's your problem. Now, Tosfos says that this is dafka if these animals are meant for shechting. If they're not being designated for shechita, then you wouldn't have the ability to say that. The Rambam learns differently. The Rambam learns, first of all, that not only if they're meant for shechita, and it could be any case, and second of all, that it's not who tells them you have to shecht it, it's rather the nizik himself, the one who they went into his property after two or three times when the owner was not taking care of them, the owner has the right to take the animals, shech them, sell the meat, and give the meat to the and not the meat, give the meat or give the money whatever to the owner minus whatever he was damaged in.
So
the Nizek has the ability to shech those goats on site and then yeah.
When you say two, three times, I mean, what's the limit?
So that's what I'm saying.
Well, if it only happens once.
If it only happens once, then you don't have the ability to do that yet.
So it has to be three times?
Yeah. Two or three, yeah. As we're attracted,
well,
is it subject.
Two or is it three?
Okay, so I don't know. He said two or three. I don't know. Then that may be subject. That may be subject. First of all, it could be how much damage they're doing, could be how often it's happening. It could also be, the next mission is going to talk about the file. When we say Tam versus Muad, the Gemara is going to talk about whether it's actually two or three, is it two times and then the third time it's a Muad, or is it three times and the fourth time it's a Muad.
Does the case of the goats compare with the Ha'ar, the dog with Ha'ar, also
Shane is always Muad, right, but what we're saying is, nevertheless, as far as the owner being responsible to shecht it out of season, or according to the Rambam, the Nizek having the ability to shecht it and give the meat or the money to the owner, that you need, that the owner needs to be warned a couple of times, and then he still doesn't take care of it. Because otherwise, according to Rashi, the point is, he intended to save these animals for market day. So if it happens one time, they get out, fine. You know, you make them pay for the damage, but you can't make them shecht the animals now out of season, and the meat will spoil by the time you find the buyers.
Three times.
Two or three times, that's what we're saying. Okay. If you want the case that you want to mention.